How can we produce him when he's not here?
Who's in charge there? Harbin demanded. I want to speak to your top person.
That'd be Big George. George Ambrose. He's our chief administrator.
Get him.
He's not here.
Harbin's jaw clenched. Are you joking, or do you want me to start shooting?
Her eyes widened. George is aboard the Elsinore, greeting some VIP from Cellini.
Patch me through to him.
Sullenly, the woman said, I'll try. The screen went blank. Harbin turned to his comtech.
Did she cut me off?
The technician shrugged. Maybe it wasn't deliberate.
Harbin thought otherwise. They're playing a delaying game.
Why?
Do they know we're almost out of propellant? Why are they being stubborn?
Aloud, he commanded.
Show me the ships parked at the habitat.
The technician murmured into the pin microphone at her lips, and the main screen lit up. Chrysalis showed up as a circle in the middle of the display. Harbin counted 11 ships co-orbiting nearby. One of them was identified as Elsinore, a passenger-carrying torch ship. The others appeared to be freighters, ore carriers, logistics supply vessels.
We'll have to take the propellants and supplies we need from them, Harbin said to himself, after we've found Fuchs.
He called up Elsinore's manifest, registered to Astro Corporation, just in from Cellini. No cargo, carrying only one passenger, someone identified as Edith Elgin from Cellini.
From Cellini, he thought. Who would pay the expense of sending a torch ship from Cellini to Ceres for just one passenger? Lars Fuchs must be aboard that ship. He has to be. The passenger they've identified on their manifest, this Edith Elgin, must be a front for Fuchs. It must be.
Harbin rose from his command chair.
Take the con, he said to his pilot. I'll be back in a few moments. If Chrysalis's chief administrator calls, let me know immediately.
He ducked through the hatch and walked a few steps to the door of his private quarters.
They're not going to give up Fuchs willingly, Harbin thought. They might know that we're low on supplies, or guess it. Maybe they think they can wait us out. Maybe they could be calling for more astro attack ships to come to their aid.
He looked at his bed.
How long has it been since I've slept? He asked himself.
With a shake of his head, he answered,
No matter. This is no time for sleep.
He went past the bed and into his lavatory. There he opened the slim case that housed his medications.
I'll need to stay alert, razor sharp, he told himself.
He picked one of the vials and fitted it to the hypo spray. Rolling up the sleeve of his tunic, he pressed the spray gun against his bare skin and pushed the plunger. He felt nothing. For good measure, he fitted another vial to the hypo spray and shot the additional dose into his bloodstream.
Big George was walking Edith Elgin down the passageway to Elsinore's main airlock, where his shuttlecraft had docked. You won't need a spice suit, George was saying. We'll go straight into the shuttle, and then we'll dock with Chrysalis. A shirt-sleeve environment all the way. Edith smiled, delighted with this big, shaggy mountain of a man with the wild, brick-red hair and beard. He would look terrific on video. I'm looking forward to seeing how the rock rats live, she said, secretly berating herself for not having a micro-cam attached to her and slave to wherever her eyes focused. Always ready to shoot, she reminded herself. You're letting an opportunity slip away. There aren't many ratties in the habitat. Mostly clerks and shopkeepers. The real rock rats are out in the belt, working their bums off. Even with this war going on? She asked. George nodded. No work, no eat. But isn't it dangerous with ships being attacked? Sure it is, but... Urgent message for Mr. Ambrose, the overhead intercom speakers blared. George swiveled his head around, spotted a wall phone and hurried to it. Edith followed him. A bone-thin woman's face showed up in the wall phone's little screen. An unidentified ship has taken up a parking orbit, They're demanding we surrender Lars Fuchs to them.
Lars isn't here, George said.
I told him that, but he said we either give him Fuchs or he starts shooting.
Bloody fucking maniac, George growled.
He wants to talk to you.
Right. I want to talk to him. Put me through.
Harbin felt perfectly normal. Bright, alert, ready to deal with these miserable rock rats or whatever other enemies came at him. For the moment, though, he was sitting in his command chair, staring into the sky-blue eyes of a man sporting a thick mane of blazing red hair and an equally wild-looking beard. Stroking his own neatly cropped beard, Harbin said,
It's very simple. You surrender Fuchs to me, or I'll destroy you.
We don't have Fuchs,
George Ambrose said, obviously working hard to hold back his temper.
How do I know that's true?
Come aboard and look for yourself. He's not here.
He is aboard Elsinore. Don't deny it.
He isn't. He's not here. You're welcome to come aboard and search the ship from top to bottom.
I'm not such a fool. You've already spirited him away to your habitat.
Search the habitat, then.
With a dozen men, you could hide him from us easily.
Ambrose started to say something, thought better of it, and sucked in a deep breath. At last he said,
Look, whoever the fook you are, Chrysalis is neutral territory. We're not armed. We have no weapons. You're welcome to search the habitat to your heart's content. We'll resupply your ship and fill your propellant tanks for you. What more can I offer you?
Lars Fuchs, said Harbin implacably. This stubborn fool is beginning to anger me, he realized.
He could feel the rage building deep within him, like a seething pit of hot lava burning its way toward the surface.
Lars isn't here, Ambrose insisted. He's not anywhere near here. We exiled the poor bloody bastard years ago. He's persona non grata.
Harbin leaned forward in his chair, his eyes narrowing, his hands clenching into fists.
You have 1 half hour to produce Fuchs. If you haven't given him to me by then, I will destroy your precious habitat and everyone in it.
Cellini, Douglas Stavanger's quarters. Doug Stavanger sat tensely in the armchair at one end of his living room sofa. At the matching chair at the other end sat Pancho Lane. Between them, Martin Humphreys was on the sofa, beneath a genuine bone-still painting of a sleek rocket sitting on the moon's rugged surface. Pancho looks wary, Stavanger thought, like a gazelle that's been caught in a trap. The trousers of her trim sea-green business suit hid the cast on her left ankle. Humphreys looks worried, too, he realized. I've never seen him so uptight. Maybe being nearly killed has finally knocked some sense into his head. This war has gone far enough, Doug Stavanger said, leaning forward earnestly. Too far, in fact. It's got to stop. Now. Neither Pancho nor Humphreys said a word. They looked like 2 school kids who'd been sent to the principal's office for discipline, Stavanger thought. He focused on Pancho. Despite Cellini's demands and my personal request to you, Astro has used its facilities here to direct military operations. She nodded, lips tight. Yep, that's true. And you produced a disaster. Pancho nodded again. Turning to Humphreys, he said, And that fire in your personal preserve could have wiped out all of Cellini. I didn't start the fire, Humphreys snapped. It was that murdering son of a bitch, Fuchs. And why was he trying to get to you? Pancho interjected. He's a killer, you know that. Everybody knows it. He even killed one of my assistants, Victoria Farrar. And how many have you killed? Pancho retorted. You've tried to kill Lars more than once. For the first time in long, long years, Stavanger felt angry, truly angry. These 2 stubborn idiots were threatening Cellini and everyone living in it. I don't care who started the fire, he said coldly.